All right, we're in the second week of studying the book of Judges, and we've got about 10 weeks to cover all of the book of Judges, and I thank Richard for teaching it last week, and I listened to what he did, and you're going to step down tonight. Richard did an outstanding job last week of introducing the book of Judges, and I just was thrilled with his grasp and his understanding of the book of Judges, and so we all owe him a real debt for the time he spent getting ready to teach that. And so we'll cover some of the stuff that he mentioned last week, but we will mention mention several other things. It's rather interesting to put the judges in the proper place, because where do the judges fit in? And here's a way I think to locate things in the Bible, and that is, if I say the name Moses, you'll know, you know the name Moses. You know, you may not know he lived 120 years, but you know what he did, and you know that period. And so if I say the name Moses, that gives us a location in the Bible. Well, after Moses, what's after Moses? Who takes Moses' place? Joshua. Now, think real, real hard, and if your eyesight is good enough, could anybody possibly come up with how long he lived? He lived 110 years. And so, you know, we just finished the study of the book of Joshua, and we're now in the book of Judges. So we've got this time frame. Now, the life of Moses and the life of Joshua overlap, because Joshua was there at Mount Sinai when the Ten Commandments were given. And so it's not really, you don't add the two together to figure out how many years it was since they left the land of Egypt, or since Moses was born down in the land of Egypt. That'll not allow you to do that. But if you mention Bible characters, what happens after Joshua? I mean, you stop and think about it. You outline the Bible sometimes just with Bible characters. If I say who's the first man, you know that, right? And that's one of those characters. And so, who is that first man? Act like you're smart. All right, that's Adam. That's not hard. If I say Adam, you know the story about Adam. You know Garden of Eden. You know the tree of life. You know the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know the creation of the world. You know of sin. And so just to say the name Adam gives you a starting place. Then if I say Noah, if you'd never seen a Bible, let me tell you a story about Adam. Let me tell you a story about Noah. And all that is just to mention people's name, and that gives you almost an outline of the Bible. Adam and Noah, and then, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And it's not our purpose to talk about all of those characters, but that's the story of the Bible. You know, Adam and Noah and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. If I say Joseph, you associate a geographical location with Joseph. And that's Egypt, yeah. And if I say Moses, does that give you a geographical location? Yep. Moses gets us out of the land of Egypt, or gets the Jews out of the land of Egypt, heads toward the promised land, and Joshua takes them into the promised land. I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at the things Richard talked about last week. This is really important, and that is the faithfulness of Joshua's generation. And I thought it was remarkable. Richard just stretched my mind and gave me some appreciation for the fact, if you had seen Joshua telling you march around the walls of Jericho, you know, six days, you know, once a day, and seven times on the seventh day, and then after that, how much faith would you have had in Joshua? I mean, you stop and think about it. I don't know how much faith they had when they were out there marching around the walls of Jericho, you know. It could very easily be an unbeliever. Just, well, Joshua says you do it. I'm a part of the army. I've got to be out there. I've got to do all of this. But whenever you see the reality of what happens, now let's go take Ai, and let's go take the next city, and let's go take down the land of the Amorites. Let's just go ahead and let's just take all of this nation. And I appreciate Richard helping me understand what faith is. You know, faith is knowing God and knowing what God has done. And you don't have to see a miracle to know what God's done. I mean, you do really believe he was born in Bethlehem. You weren't there when he was born, but you really believe that. You really believe he walked on the water. You weren't there, but you really believe he walked on the water. And it's that faith that those individuals could have in Joshua, because they were able to see what Joshua had done, And we really believe the walls of Jericho. We were not there, but we believe that. But it is that personal knowledge of being around Joshua that gave them faith to do whatever Joshua said. What about us? You know, you weren't there when he took the loaves and the fishes. Wouldn't you like to have been in the front row when he fed the loaves, when he broke those broke that bread and the loaves and the fishes? When he broke that first fish head off, did another head pop on? Did he break the tail off first? I don't know. I try to envision what was happening there, and somebody was there. Somebody saw when he took that bread and he spread that bread out there, and then all of the massive amount of bread that was left over and the basketfuls that were left over, they were there. But if I'd been there, I wouldn't believe it any more than I believe it right now. That really happened. And the faith that they have in Joshua is the faith that we have in Jesus. But I really appreciate Richard making that point. And then Richard talked about that another generation arose. And that is really what we're going to study in the book of Judges. And so for the next 8 weeks after tonight, this is week two of a 10-week study, for the next 8 weeks, we're going to study this. That next generation and the generation after that and the generation after that and the generation after that. And somebody answered the question last week, Betty, didn't he give you a prize? Did he say you get the donut or something? I forget what he said, but whenever he said, yeah, haven't got it yet. We'll have to check with Richard. But I remember Richard asked the question, how many judges there were? And Betty, I guess you're the one that gave the answer because he says you get the donut. I'm not sure if that's the prize he offered or not, but that's right. There were 15 judges. Now, 13 of those judges are in the book of Judges. And so that's what we're going to be studying. We're going to study 13 of the judges. And then after we get through the 13th judge, we'll start studying 1 Samuel. I think somebody else is going to teach 1 Samuel. But you get to Judge 14 and 15, and that's Eli and Samuel. And we know a lot about those characters. But some of the others we may not know quite as much. It's rather interesting, and just because numbers fascinate me and things of that nature, to talk about how long the period of the judges last. And so there's some difficulty, and Richard talked about this last week, because you try to add up the number of years there are in the book of Judges, and it's very likely that those judges, someone would have been that leader at the same time in the southern part, they're living up in the northern part, they could have been contemporaneous. And so sometimes it is difficult, and it depends how you add it up and how you divide it out. But it's about I think Richard said 300. It's about 350 years or so. And I've got an interesting verse here, and we're not going to discuss this, but 1 Kings chapter 6 and verse 1 says that it was 480 years. From the time of the Exodus until Solomon built the temple. And everything was in the third year of Solomon's reign. And so you take those numbers and take 480 and work backwards. And that's how you develop a situation here about trying to figure out exactly how long the period of the... It doesn't really matter for us to figure that out. We just know an approximate number in relationship to that. But we're not going to look into that. That's more a different kind of study from what we're trying to do here. But he talked about the lifestyle of individuals during that period of time. And they were a nomadic people. For 40 years, they lived in tents. And now they go into the promised land during the time of Joshua. They're not nomadic. They've got houses. They moved out of tents into completed houses. They're now farmers. They evidently weren't doing a lot of farming out there in the wilderness. They're now farmers. They're vineyards that they have. They didn't plant those vineyards. And it'd be interesting to know how those people whose fathers were how would you describe them? Brick makers out of mud and straw. And now all of a sudden, here's their grandchildren in the promised land, and they've become farmers. Now, they still have sheep, and they have sheep. They're still shepherds, but they've got farming areas now. And they're a nomadic people, and they're going to become a unified nation when we get to King Saul. And I tried to think in my imagination of what it would have been like and what lifestyle would have been like for them when they first got into the promised land. And the thing that came to mind, and this may not illustrate it at all, but go back to the War of Independence, you know, what, 1776? And let's cross over the Appalachians. Let's go up into the Midwest up there. Let's come down to Tennessee, Kentucky, and Alabama, and Georgia. Well, Georgia's one of the original 13. And people who came across the mountains there, they weren't a nation. You know, they were people that moved across, and they set up little villages and set up towns and things of this nature. But there's not a whole lot of national identification. And so it was whenever they got into the promised land, they moved into cities that they had that they had not built. But they had no identity as a nation at all. And in my imagination, I think about the settling of the states as they came across the Appalachians, and really almost all the way to California. That's what they were. It was just a group of people, very common, ordinary people, just trying to make a living, trying to hold together and everything. It was not that they were a real unified nation and they had an identity. They had armies. But to have an army, you've got to have men who have weapons. And sometimes they didn't have men skilled enough to make their weapons. And so when we start thinking about them as a nation, during the time of the judges, sometimes we may need to go back and rethink really what was happening there in relationship to that. Now, Richard talked about this last week. What God wanted them to happen was them to teach that next generation. Isn't it remarkable that the generation that left Egypt, it's their children that Joshua led into the promised land. And do you know Deuteronomy chapter 6? The words that I command you this day shall be in your heart. That's where it starts. And Joshua is saying that to his generation. When Joshua says that in Deuteronomy chapter 6, he's not talking about the guys that left the land of Egypt. He's talking about those who were the children, who when they left the land of Egypt, they'd been born, they were under 20 years of age. And so I say Joshua, Moses calls that generation together just the last month before Moses dies, and he says, and he's talking to the second generation, not the generation that left the land of Egypt. They've all perished in the wilderness. They've numbered the people and nobody's left alive except Joshua and Caleb and some of the Levites of those who were capable of going to war. And so he says to that second generation, the words that I command you today shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently under your children. And to talk about them. And the description of how they would talk about them is a description almost, I think, of the guys who've come across the Appalachians. When you're sitting at home, when you're out walking around, when you're lying down, when you're rising up. Think about if you have a history in the church, go back to your grandfather or great-grandfather's generation. And just imagine how life was when they lived on those farms. There weren't a lot of big fancy schools and school buses and athletic programs and Little League baseball. And you look back in that kind of an environment and sometimes don't you just wish you could go back to that environment again? So you didn't have to deal with all this mess that's out here in this world to impact the rearing of your children. And then she'll go back to great-grandfather's generation, and they're out there, and they go out in the fields, and they work together. They're walking out to the place to work, and everybody's going to work. And so they take a break for lunch, and they're still talking about God. I mean, that's what we need to duplicate in our own hearts and in our own lives. Lest what happened in Joshua's generation or the generation after that happens in our own day. and yet they didn't do it. You would think that they would have learned the lesson from looking at mom and dad. Lack of faith. They had the faith. I mean, they conquered the promised land. They really, really had the faith. But they didn't share it. They didn't pass it on. And I think one of the most difficult things that we have in rearing our children is this in this complex world in which we live, to put faith in the hearts and lives of our children. Now, Deuteronomy 6 still works. Our lifestyle is different from the lifestyles when they came to the promised land and the lifestyles of those who came across the Appalachian. Our lifestyle is different. But we need to make time in our homes where we just talk about God. How do you put faith in the heart of your children? I heard of, wish I'd heard this when my kids were little. Every night, as they sit around the dinner table, there's a father who asks his children, let's go around the table, and everybody tells something you think that you saw evidence of God in your life today. What God do? What good thing happened in your life today that we could thank God for? Now, if you do that every night, you know what that child's going to do the next day when he wakes up? He's going to start looking for God. And he may not be the most spiritual person on earth. I think about one of my sisters. My mom told us Bible stories every night. And one of my, after she'd tell the story to the four kids, my mother would say, "Now, what do we talk about tonight?" And my sister always said, "Jesus." She had a 50-50 chance, Old Testament or New Testament. That was her standard answer. So I don't know how well she was listening. That's just sort of an inside family Jenkins joke. But but you see, what good thing happened in your life today? Forget about the children. You don't have children at home now. What if you began every day or ended every day just by looking back at that day, taking time to meditate about that day and to think about that. That's pretty good, isn't it? And Richard, you may know who this is, and I've heard the story, but I don't know who the preacher was. The older preacher whose wife had been dead for 15 years, and he prayed every night, "God, I am so lonely. I want to go and be with my wife. And I'm ready to die. I'm ready to go. But if there's something I do for you tomorrow, be sure and wake me up." How about that? A lot of us here in those sunset years, you know, and if it hadn't turned gray, it's turned loose. But just think about that. "God, wake me up tomorrow if there's something I..." You know what that does when you wake up the next morning? That's keeping God on the practical level in your life. And they didn't do it. And the amazing thing is that even though there was all of this encouragement from Joshua, do you know the names of the judges? Do you think it might be possible for us to memorize the 15 judges in the next 8 weeks? If I tell you the name of the first and the second one and the third one, do you think you could tell me the name of the fourth one? If I say Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, could you possibly figure out the fourth one? Deborah, you got a donut. You got the donut prize. I know. I was hoping it was up there, Becky. Okay, I mean, not Becky. Yes, Bonnie. Why did I call her Becky? You stop and think about it. That's not hard to learn, is it? And we're going to spend some time. We're going to spend some time talking about Ehud. Ehud's one of my favorite Bible stories. You know why? Isn't that amazing? What do I remember about Ehud? He's left-handed, you know. And somebody held up their left hand just instead of holding up the right, the proper hand, they held up their left hand. And that's true. If you're left-handed, I think it's one of the great stories in the Bible. And he's the only left-handed person that we know about by name in the Bible. I think there's 701 left-handed people mentioned in the Bible as being left-handed. But I find this fascinating. And so if we spend time next week talking about Ehud, you've already got that. Othniel. Who's this guy Othniel? Well, we got to talk about him. There's not many verses devoted to him. But if I tell you that his father-in-law was once a spy that went in to spy out the land. You remember when Moses sent out the 12 spies? And you remember the names of those two spies that came back that says, let's go take this land. And everybody else said, we cannot do it. And because of their unbelief, God said, okay, you cannot do it. You cannot do it. If that's what you believe, that's what's going to happen. If I tell you the name of one of them was Joshua, and he's not related at all to Othniel, could you tell me the other guy that did not die? Caleb. His son-in-law. I don't know if you know that or not. But the Bible, the story of the Bible is Bible stories. What? It may be his nephew. I thought I read it, but my memory is not what it used to be. Look at Joshua chapter 3, I think it is. Is it his nephew? Okay. So just go back and do a cut and paste, and every time I have put the word father-in-law, put the word nephew every time I said father-in-law. His nephew was the first judge, Othniel. Ehud? Yeah. Left-handed judge. We're going to talk about that story. I love the story of Ehud. Shamgar is a two-verse judge. He's barely mentioned. And Deborah, I'm amazed how many people know the woman judge. You know, you do Bible drills and everything. Who was the first man? Who built the ark? And who's a woman judge? And every woman in the church almost says Deborah, because she's an important Bible character, and she occupies. And so there's a great story connected with Deborah. And I don't know if you remember the victory that was had. And you remember the man that was trying to run away from God's people and went to a tent? You know that story? We'll have to talk about it a little bit more. I don't want to go ahead and tell the story. But he woke up the next morning with a real bad headache because he had a tent stake driven through his head. If you don't know that story, you need to be here, you know. That's all over there in the story about Deborah. I'll bet you know another name, and that's the name Gideon. Gideon. Now, I've got Abimelech there because he is the son of Gideon. And there's a great lesson to be learned about Abimelech in relationship to this. Gideon, Abimelech. And then these three are just one word. If you're going to memorize the judges, you know, it's Tola, Jair, Jephthah. And there, if you just make one word out of that, you know, Tola, Jair, Jephthah. It's interesting. You'll know the judges, because you're going to learn these three together, and then you're going to learn the next three together, and that's Ibzan, Elon, Abdon. And so I don't want you to try to remember. I want you tonight to remember Othniel, who's a left-handed guy, Ehud, two-verse guy, Shamgar, woman judge, Deborah, army of 300, Gideon, his son, Abimelech. Okay. Tola, Jair, Jephthah. Oh, Jephthah, yeah. He's important. God, help me win this battle. Help me win this battle. And we're going to go over these names enough, so if you'll really work at this, you'll be able to know the judges by the time we finish this study. Just let me memorize the first three or four tonight. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah. Don't worry about all the rest of them. It's like the pygmy that ate an entire elephant. And they said, how on earth did you eat an entire elephant? And he said, one bite at a time. And you learn a lot in the Bible by learning it one bite at a time. And so don't try to sit down. I got to memorize. No, you don't have to memorize all 15 of them. Can you just learn 3 or 4 of them tonight? Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah. And then you got Ibzan, Elon, Abdon. See, that's one word. I don't know if that'll be one word to you, because there are these judges that are 2 or 3 verse judges. And so there's not a lot of details that we need to know about, Tola, Jair, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon. Those are just names, but they're not just names to people in the Bible. But we can't spend a long time talking about Tola, Jair, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon when the Bible doesn't spend a lot of time about it. But they're important because they bridge that tribe that was a nomadic tribe. They bridge that tribe from the time of they came into the promised land until, because of the adversity that's in their life for 300 years, they're really becoming a nation. Because they do have a leader, and that is, it's going to be the judge that is going to be their leader. And then you get to those judges, and then these three you already know. You don't even have to memorize these last three. Strong man, Samson, the old judge, Eli, and Samuel. See, you already know those names. So we only have to memorize 12. But you see, if you memorize Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, and Deborah, plus Samson, Eli, Samuel, you've already got 7 out of 15. You're halfway. If you just pick up another 2, you'll get a D-, and that's passing. And my mom didn't think that was good enough, but I think if I just get a D- on listening to these judges, I don't know if that's passing grade with God, but it will help you bridge the gap. When does Samson live in relationship to David? I mean, you know, we know these stories. Where does Jonah fit in the Bible? What about Elijah and Elisha? And to try to plug all of them in some places, we know all of these Bible characters. We can't put them together. I remember being a student at Freed Hardeman. We took biology together. You know, I stack things in my head in a crazy way. I don't know if I told you this or not, but Ron Coleman, other than Judy, the best friend I've got on earth, we study biology together, and we would make up names and funny stories about all of the classifications of all of the animals in biology. And so I remember to this day, and I'm going back. I mean, is that how many years ago when I was at Freed Hardeman? You know, is that 60 years ago? Almost 60 years ago. And the classification for beetles is Coleoptera. Why on earth would you remember that? Well, here's Coleman. That's his name. And so the beetles have come out. You remember the beetles? And I saw Ron. He had a flat top at that time with long hair. And so how could you ever get Coleoptera? And so we studied this, and it's the amazing thing. There were several biology classes that you had. The teacher would teach, you know, several of them. But had the same test for every class, and the day he gave the test, you didn't have to go to class. You went to the test at 6 o'clock that night. And so we had finished our study. We'd finished our regular classes. We went to Ron's room or my room, and we just stacked all of this information. So we headed to the test, and I said, he said, Jenkins, you got it? I said, I think so. I said, Coleman, you got it? He said, yeah. And Dave Howell was with us. We said, Dave, you got it? He said, I've got it. It's all in my head. It's just like alphabet soup. And I thought a lot about that. Bible stories are like alphabet soup in our heads. It's not that hard to plug them in. You know, if you'll learn the 15 periods of Bible history, learn some way to plug all of these things in, you're going to be surprised how much more you know about the Bible than other people. Other people, you know, your friends in denomination, they don't understand the Old Testament, New Testament. They've hardly ever even seen that division page. Now, they don't. But can you think you can remember Samson, Eli, Samuel, and Othniel, left-handed guy, Ehud, and then the 2 verse guy, Shamgar and Deborah. You know, that's 7 of them. We're going to get a passing grade for most of it if you'll just work with this in relationship to this. I've got Joshua 2, and I don't know how I got Joshua 2 before I got Joshua chapter 1. Here's what I want to do. I want us to look at an outline of the book of Joshua. Pardon me, the book of Judges. And this is not original with me, but if you can think about the book of Judges like the face of a clock. And what we're going to do, we're just going to run around the face of the clock. So right up here, and I didn't put the 12 o'clock up there at the top, perhaps I should. But here's an outline of the book of Judges. When Joshua is alive, 12 o'clock, they're faithful. All the days of Joshua and all of the days of that generation, Joshua's generation. I tried to think about this in a practical situation. What's a generation? If I say Bill Hatcher, that's not this generation. How many of you were a part of this church when Bill Hatcher preached here? There are not that many hands up. That generation's about gone. I'm sorry to inform you. That generation's about gone. When we talk about the church being one generation from not being here, that's how quick it is. I mean, you stop and think about it. That generation is hardly here. And 30 years from now, there'll be, well, can I talk about that generation? I didn't ask David today. David Sproul. David was 6 years old when I came here. Now, David heard Bill preach when he came back for homecomings and things of that nature. But our David, he's not a part of the generation. That's how quickly another generation comes on. Now, some of you have known David, you know, from as long as you've been in the church, you know, for those who did not raise your hand, there is that generation. And that Bill Hatcher generation, they knew the book. They really, really knew the Bible. And the question is, what are we doing for the David Sproul generation? And not just the David Sproul generation, but we can get a little bit younger if we talk about Nate and Cindy and Brad and Amber Denise. And I don't see anybody young on that page. Jim, you don't fit in there. I'm sorry. You understand what I mean? What about you guys? You know, what kind of job are we doing? And if we're not doing it like it ought to be done, would you guys be, you young people, be smart enough to get it in your head and do better than we did? Do better than what we have done? Faithfulness. But when that generation dies, 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock is the next generation, and there it comes, okay? And that is idolatry. When that generation dies, that's it. No faithfulness. And by and large, that nation becomes so ungodly. Now, I'm probably going to change the words next week and either put here or in the down at 6 o'clock the matter of God allowing the enemies to come in and punish them. That's what happened. Faithful to God, unfaithfulness, and because God dealt with them more physically than He deals with us. I'm not saying He doesn't deal with us physically. For God turns into hell every nation that forgets Him. We're in trouble, folks. You talk about the faith when they came across the Appalachian. And is there any idolatry going on in America? Covetousness is idolatry. And there's not a whole lot of difference in taking a tree and making an idol out of it and taking a tree and making a dollar bill out of it. And we need to be aware of the danger. It's the world in which we live. You got to have things. You got to have Pokemon Go, right? I mean, don't you have to have all of the latest apps and everything? Brad, if somebody comes looking for Pokemon in the building, should we let him in or not? He says no. That's a new app that came out, what, last week, last Thursday? You don't trust anybody, okay. It's a brand new app that's sweeping this nation. If you don't know about it, ask your grandchildren. It's an amazing, that's where I learned about it from my grandson and last Thursday night when I was up in Atlanta. It's another generation. And so they turned to idolatry, and God allowed the nations to come against them, and they repented. If I say 9/11, if I say 9/12, we understand that. To a former generation, you might have said December the 8th. You might have said December the 7th. That's when it happened. But adversity drives you to God. Righteousness, falling on your knees. What, there are no atheists in a foxhole? You heard that expression? That's not 100% true, obviously. But when the mortar rounds are incoming, and that's where they were. And so whenever they turned away from God, God brought such adversity on them that they turned to God. And God heard them when they prayed. And God raised up a deliverer, a judge. And sometimes I think it might help us understand the book of Judges better if we thought about it being named deliverers. The word deliverer is not used in the book of Judges. But if you can understand where Othniel comes in, and Ehud, and Shamgar, and Deborah, and Gideon, you know where they. Here's where they come in. They come in right up here at 9 o'clock. The nation has been driven to its knees because of their ungodliness and their unfaithfulness to God, and they're driven to their knees. And that's the outline of the book of Judges. So here's where we go. Next week is where we're going to go. I've got 5 after buzz. What time have you got? Should we start ringing some bells here? Okay. If you want to go ahead and ring them, I guess. I'm finished, and I can keep going if we want to. But all right. We're finished. Let's go.